It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
This is Bonus Benson.
This segment is officially completely off the rails.
What are you talking about?
Stuff we wish never aired.
You know, I'm the talent.
Right, of course.
Except... I'm the talent.
Come on, man.
The Guy Benson Show.
Home stretch on The Guy Benson Show. Catch me tonight. Coming up in the next hour on The Bottom Line, Fox Business Network. GuyBensonShow.com, our website here. Podcast is always free. It is always on demand. So last night, CBS... the broadcast network had this Billy Joel special that they had been advertising heavily, I mean for weeks. Billy Joel performed at the Grammys for the first time in years and years because he has this new song out, Turn the Lights Back On, which I absolutely adore. We've talked about it here. I played clips of it on the show. I had goosebumps when it first came out, and he did perform it live at the Grammy Awards. And then they made this announcement, CBS did, well, if you like that, don't you worry, Billy Joel fans, and there are legions of Billy Joel fans around the country, we are going to air a special presentation on April 14th, Sunday night, of Billy Joel's 100th concert. 100 sellouts in a row in this Madison Square Garden residency he's been doing, where, absent COVID, where everything shut down for a while, the man played the Garden in Midtown Manhattan to sold-out crowds every single month for a decade. It's crazy. It's wild. Some artists have their residencies out in Vegas. This is Madison Square Garden. And I had the pleasure, we talked about it on the show, of attending one of those concerts a couple of months ago. It was like 90-something in the list of consecutive sellouts in this residency. And then just recently, he hit 100. Big milestone. CBS had all of their equipment there, so many different cameras for angles, and they captured the whole show. And then they sliced it all down into this two-hour package, and it was going to air last night. So I saw Billy Joel announce it on his social media on Instagram. So I then put it literally in my calendar to record that broadcast. It was going to be last night. So I was all ready to go, excited to watch, and I've seen him 5 times now in concert. And so I kind of know how the concerts go. They're so much fun. I'd go 5 more times if I can, God willing. And I've got plans to see him and Stevie Nicks this summer, which I am so stoked about. But still, all the different cameras and the history behind it, I was going to be there with bells on watching this concert. And I knew, look, there's no way it's going to be the full concert. They can't take the full, let's say, 2.5-hour concert plus the encore and air the whole thing live or uninterrupted. They're going to have commercials. They're going to break it up. My guess was, and I was correct, my guess was they were going to take Piano Man, his most famous song. It's his whole nickname. It's his moniker, Piano Man. So they were going to take that song, my prediction was, and put it at the very end. Even though in concerts, it's usually not the song that he ends with. He does a lot of upbeat stuff in his encore, Uptown Girl and You May Be Right, and a bunch of other songs that people love. Only the Good Die Young usually comes later. Anyway, because it's the iconic song, though, that gave birth to the nickname that he has as an artist, I figured they would put it at the very end. And that's exactly what they did. So they took the concert, they cut up certain parts of it. They eliminated certain songs. There's no way they could air all of it. I saw some people complaining about that. Like, I was at the concert. This is not the same order. This is not all the songs. That's expected. It's network television. You got to have reasonable breathing room and parameters. They're going to do what they have to do. And even breaking it up and airing certain songs out of sequence didn't really bother me. What did bother me was what ended up happening. So the Masters concluded yesterday. That's a CBS property. So CBS aired the end of the Masters, and obviously the golf world was very interested in that. I am not. a golf fan. I'm a sports fan, but not into golf. I think the Masters looks beautiful. It's on my bucket list to somehow get there one day just to experience Augusta. It just seems incredible. But the actual competition, the sport itself, almost none of the golfers in play. Like, I don't even know who these people are. It's just not where my head is. It's fine. If you're into it, great. But it went late. So that pushed back their whole schedule. Billy Joel special was supposed to start at 9 p.m. Eastern time and go till 11. And then there's the late local news or whatever the schedule might be. But because everything got shoved backwards by the Masters and CBS didn't want to shortchange any of their other programming, including some of these shows that I don't really watch many of at all, but I guess are pretty popular with large audiences, they just picked up the whole schedule and moved it back by around half an hour. So they put a little graphic up on the screen during, I think, a show called Tracker that I guess has really good ratings. I don't think I've ever heard of it before. But anyway, like, Billy Joel special starts at 9:31 p.m. Eastern time. So a 31-minute delay. I said, okay, that's not the end of the world. I can wait. I've been waiting long enough to watch this. So the concert starts, I think. They did a really good job with it overall. I mean, the shots were beautiful, the lighting of the garden, the way that they had everyone in the audience had like a little wristband that was electronic that could coordinate different lighting effects within the crowd, which is what I experienced when I went to a Coldplay concert in London. It looks great. And the garden is such an iconic venue. Billy was at the top of his game. The guy's in his mid-70s. It's impressive. Jerry Seinfeld came out and gave a tribute, which was cool, for 100 shows. They raised the banner to the rafters. Sting came out and sang a song with Billy Joel. It was great. And yeah, they left on the cutting room floor, I'm sure, some of the less known songs. But the big ones, the hits, including the new song, they got to all of that. And then time is sort of winding down. And lo and behold, certainly not to my surprise, they're going to close with Piano Man. So Billy Joel starts performing that biggest hit of his life, the one that it's not my favorite Billy Joel song. It's not even close to my favorite Billy Joel song, but it's a classic. It's the classic. It's going last. It's batting cleanup for a reason. Some of my favorite songs he had already played earlier on. But I'm going to stay tuned, and a lot of people are waiting. They're staying tuned for the 2 hours because they want to see the Piano Man sing Piano Man. So he does so, and people enjoy it. Everyone in the building is singing along, which is what happens when you go to his show. How can you not, after a few beers especially, maybe a long drink, sing along to Piano Man, for crying out loud? And then midway through the song, remember how I said it was 9:31? So everything got moved 31 minutes. So I kept wondering, is this going to be like 1 minute off? I'm like, no, they're network professionals. I'm sure they've got a whole system in place. It's going to be fine. It was not fine. In the middle of Piano Man, like, the master control computer at CBS cut off the broadcast and went to local news. All over the East Coast, the East and Central time zones, anyone watching Billy Joel had him cut off mid-breath, basically, during Piano Man for their late local news. And the thing is, we know they can delay by a few minutes late local news. They do it all the time for sports, right? CBS Sports is not cutting off a playoff football game, for example, or even like a regular season NFL game because it's going into overtime. Because we got to get that late local news in. That doesn't happen. You just wait after the game, right? You see the promos throughout the broadcast. After the game, we've got this local news story, plus your forecast. They wait. But I guess someone screwed up the math or the timing or the logistics or whatever. And so this is what I'd imagine millions of Americans, Billy Joel fans, heard last night. Some version of this, cut 28.
Live from CBS 4, this is your news now.
Wow. They sit at the bar and put bread in my jar and say, man, what are you doing here? We didn't even get the end of that one great lyric. The computer cut him off, and then the graphics started, and that was CBS 4 somewhere, is I think in our neck of the woods, CBS 9. And I just sat up on the couch. I was like, wait. Because I had paused the broadcast on my DVR to, like, do a few things, or feed the baby and that kind of thing. So, like, maybe it just jumped. Maybe I didn't record this properly, so I rewound it. I fast-forwarded. It happened that same way every time. I was like, was this a me thing? So I quickly hopped on Twitter just to see if there was any reaction, and oh, there was reaction. This happened over most of the United States. And Billy Joel's, I'd say, hardest core, biggest fan base is on the East Coast, in the Northeast specifically. So you have all these Billy Joel fans like, what just happened? You cut off Piano Man? Are you kidding? So I was tweeting. I was texting people. I emailed a few folks. I was not happy. And I haven't seen an update today, but I'm wondering at some point, does CBS, because this is bad, that is a really bad mistake, does CBS end up inviting Billy Joel onto one of its signature shows, like, I'm not a huge fan, but Colbert, or The Morning Show, or something, to perform Piano Man in its entirety without being cut off by CBS? They hyped this thing, to my delight, for weeks, and then they cut him off during Piano Man because of a schedule problem on their end. Unbelievable. I don't think I've ever seen anything like that. People were comparing it to the Heidi game, a football game that got cut off for the movie Heidi years ago, like decades ago. I thought we were past that. I guess not anymore. Not last night. Congratulations to people in the Western time zones. You got to see the whole concert, I guess. But I didn't. And I went to bed fuming about that because it was also late. I stayed up watching CBS later than I typically ever would. And that was the payoff. And I was such a fan all the way through it. I thought they did a good job. I forgave some of the quibbles from other people. And then just a cardinal sin. That's an unforgivable mistake. So we'll see how they try to make it right. Ugh. I mean, it is kind of funny. That's an epic screw-up. Christine, I was tempted to call you. I was so angry, but I figured that's way past your bedtime. But you saw the clip, right? It's kind of a shocking thing.
It makes no sense. I mean, especially like you said up here. I would just love to know all the angry Italians on Long Island. What was their first couple of words when that happened?
Oh, ones that we cannot air. I don't think that we could air whatever I said. I can't believe that they did that. That is a big math mistake. And it's like, of all the songs to cut him off during, and they were close. My guess is, I don't know, my guess is he would have finished Piano Man, big cheer from the crowd, he basks in it and waves, and then it's over. They were, I think, 1 minute away, but they messed it up. I don't think I can remember seeing anything like it. So they'll probably put it out on Paramount Plus. I'm not paying to see the thing that was supposed to be aired competently on national television. Ay, ay, ay. I'll just have to go see him again in person, which I plan to do this summer. Oh, I can't wait. It whets my appetite further. That's the best spin I can put on it. But egg all over the face of CBS after last night. I'm heading over to TV to hopefully not embarrass myself on The Bottom Line coming up in the next hour. That's with Dagan and Duffy, Fox Business Network. Back here, same time and same place on The Guy Benson Show tomorrow. We will talk to you then. Home stretch on The Guy Benson Show on this Tuesday. Thanks so much for tuning in. GuyBensonShow.com. Podcast is always free and on demand when the show is over. I would like to ask permission as a personal point of privilege for your indulgence. Some news broke yesterday that is meaningful to me in my life and my story and my childhood, and I want to reflect on that news a little bit here since I have the platform. You might find it interesting, you might not, but here goes. I'll never forget the time John Sterling left me a voicemail. In elementary school, my family moved back to the United States from overseas, and even though I was born and raised as an American, I'd spent relatively little time in my home country until that point. As I adjusted to my new life and school in northern New Jersey, I became a diehard Yankees fan. At first, it was to fit in. But after my dad took me to my first game at the stadium, I was truly hooked. My parents didn't let us have cable growing up, ironic in retrospect given my current line of work. So unless they were playing in a nationally televised game or on Channel 11, I followed the Yankees on the radio. Back then, the play-by-play pairing featured John Sterling and Michael Kay, two talented broadcasters with distinct voices and styles. I listened to those games for countless hours. And somewhere along the line, it dawned on me that these guys were paid a lot to describe baseball games to large numbers of fans. It instantly became my dream job and career goal, one that I pursued until my on-air work took a permanent turn toward news and politics after college. Shortly after establishing that professional ambition, I wrote a letter to Sterling, seeking advice and networking as imagined in the mind of a 10-year-old boy. Sometime later, I came home from school one day, and my mom met me with a twinkle in her eye. There was something I needed to hear, she said. She hit play on our answering machine. The messages would play out loud from a speaker in the 90s. And my eyes widened as I listened. "This is John Sterling," a deep, unmistakable voice rumbled. He'd actually called me. I can barely remember what he said, other than to offer some encouragement and thank me for listening. I was thrilled. I listened to the message repeatedly and played it back for my friends. The next year, 1996, the Yankees won the World Series, which they hadn't done since the late 1970s. During that magical playoff run, they beat Baltimore in the ALCS. In Game 1 of that series, which featured a memorable dash of controversy, center fielder Bernie Williams hit a walk-off home run into the left field seats in the bottom of the 11th inning to give the Yankees a 1-0 series lead. And Sterling's call of that swing became my favorite of all time. He bellowed this.
That'll be a 1-1 to Bernie Williams. Myers deals. Swung on and driven a deep left. It is high. It is far. And it's gone. Yankees win. Yankees win.
The electricity in his voice there remains goosebump-inducing. I recorded that postgame highlight off of the boombox in our kitchen, brought the cassette tape into school the next morning, and convinced the adults to let me play it over the PA system during morning announcements. That still makes me smile. By 2002, I was a high school intern at Fox News Channel for the summer. Host Brian Kilmeade, for whom I recently filled in on Fox and Friends, surreally, was filming some sort of package up at Yankee Stadium one day, and I managed to wrangle my way onto the production team. When my official duties were over, the crew left, but I had a single-day press pass, pure gold, and the Yankees had a home game that night. I stayed for the game, of course, and hung around the press box, taking it all in. I eventually worked up the nerve to introduce myself to Sterling, who invited me to sit in the narrow radio booth for as long as I'd like, perched behind him and his partner that season, Charlie Steiner. The game was tied after 9 and marched into one extra inning after another. My dad agreed to come pick me up whenever the game was over. Hours later, it finally ended. I don't even remember who won, probably a loss if that's the case, but I do remember taking a photo with Sterling in the booth on the disposable camera I'd brought along with me. When the film was developed, I was sweaty and beaming. Sterling looked exhausted after calling something like 17 innings of baseball. That photo still exists somewhere. The next year, my best friend from home, Dan Duva, now an NHL broadcaster, and I were both doing some intern-style grunt work for the fledgling Yes Network, which brought me back to the Cathedral of Baseball in the Bronx on multiple occasions. We had also persuaded the management at the Cape Cod Baseball League's Chatham A's to let us become their inaugural broadcasters, offering radio-style play-by-play for their summer league team, available online or via a 1-800 number. We called those games together for 4 summers. Through various means, we were able to get a number of our idols, sportscasters with major profiles, to record short promos or drops for our broadcasts. Quite a few big names were kind enough to indulge us, from Joe Buck to Jim Nance to Kenny Mayne to Ian Eagle, among others. But the one I was most excited about, other than a recording by legendary Yankee Stadium public address announcer Bob Shepard, was Sterling's. I grew up listening to him, after all.
Hello, everyone. This is John Sterling of the New York Yankees, and you're listening to Chatham A's Baseball with Guy Benson and Dan Duva.
This week, it was abruptly announced that the golden-voiced 85-year-old is retiring, effective immediately. He's called more than 5,600 Yankees games during his career, having started with the franchise in 1989. He's been an audio companion to so many, spanning generations. I was 4 years old when he settled in behind the microphone in the Bronx, and for the next 30 years, he never missed a single broadcast, not one. Even into his 80s, he rarely skipped a game for any reason. So Monday's development marks an inevitable, but still jarring, end of an era. Sterling will be honored in an on-field ceremony at Yankee Stadium this Saturday, and how I wish I could be there. The man has had his detractors through the years, to be sure, and maybe they weren't always wrong. He's bombastic, he's showy, he's melodramatic, he's over the top as a homer. Some of his forced player-specific home run calls veered into the absurd, and he occasionally botched calls, especially later in his career. Fine. But he embraced his role as an entertainer. When absurdity prevailed, he was usually in on the joke. Susan Waldman, his broadcast partner since 2005, aptly dubbed him an original. And Yankees Universe has loved him for it. His love of the game, his passion for its details, crackled through the radio, night in and night out. His voice documented nearly every major Yankees moment over the course of my entire fandom to date. Perhaps fittingly, one of our successors in Chatham, Emmanuel Barbari, is now one of Sterling's successors with the Yankees. How's that for a footnote? Some of Sterling's calls are etched into my memory, like this one.
The stretch and pitch swung on and popped up again off third. Hayes has room. Hayes makes the catch. Yankees win. The Yankees win. The New York Yankees have won the 1996 World Series. They have surmounted every challenge. They have climbed every mountain. And the New York Yankees are world champions.
My dad was at that game. I was weeping tears of joy in our basement. I like to say that baseball on the radio is the soundtrack of summer, and if you're lucky, autumn too. For decades, John Sterling has voiced my summer soundtrack. And one time, he even left a voicemail for a kid with a dream of having his job one day. Thank you, John, for all of it. What a career. Someone cue Sinatra.
Start spreading the news. I'm leaving today. I want to be a part of it. New York, New York.
Back here tomorrow on the Guy Benson Show, same time, same place. Thank you for listening to that. I hope you enjoyed it. We'll talk to you then.
The very heart of it, New York, New York.
Home stretch, Guy Benson Show, Wednesday edition. Thanks for tuning in. GuyBensonShow.com, podcast always free. Well, there's a story out there in the headlines. I've seen it a few different outlets. They're calling it faux talks. So listen up if you're a Botox recipient, Botox user, whatever the term would be. Apparently there is a counterfeit and mishandled version of Botox that has been causing harmful effects on people who have it then injected into their face. All right, so if there's a product that's been approved and it works, and it's then all facilitated by professionals and it's on the up and up, that's one thing. if it's a knockoff brand and then it's shot into your face, imagine that, things might go badly. And for some people, they are going badly. So clearly, this story reminded us of Cookie, because Cookie did the whole experiment with the knockoff Ozempic-type weight loss product, and we warned her not to do it. She consulted multiple doctors, all of whom unanimously told her, do not do it. And then Cookie decided she wanted Hot Girl Summer, so she was going to do it anyway, and it did not go well. And if memory serves, she ended up getting not only this knockoff brand, but she dosed it incorrectly for herself, gave herself the dosage of like a 400-pound man, and it wasn't great. Wasn't great for business, so she then quit the knockoff Ozempic. Christine, if you are ever a Botox user, are you now on the lookout for this product? Do you have anyone making sure that you are getting the real McCoy as opposed to something else that might do your body harm?
I will have to check with my Botox lady. I have not done it in a while, but I do get Botox and a tiny little bit of filler. I think it's been about 6 months, so I am due for it. I would hope that she is aware of this, but I'm going to send her. She's actually, my Botox person is in Brazil right now training. So she comes back with all like the new techniques.
And training then, with whom?
Top plastic surgeons and top doctors. And they're like, Brazil is like the place to go for any cosmetic stuff. So she goes and trains there every few months with like some of the top Botox filler doctor type people.
Is she a nurse? Is she a doctor?
She was a nurse. She was an emergency room nurse. A lot of ER nurses that I know actually have turned to this profession.
Now, you said something a moment ago that caught my attention, because I feel like last time we had the Botox conversation here on the show, you were a yes to Botox, no to filler person. Have you changed your filler position?
I do get a tiny, tiny little bit of filler. I don't think it's noticeable at all, but I notice it. I'm not really going to get too far down the road of fillers, because I heard that can go sideways quickly.
Right. And speaking of things going sideways, the reason we really went with this Botox story, which was sent to us by Dylan, is because of the fake Ozempic debacle that we really talked about somewhat extensively here on the show back when it happened. This was months ago, maybe last summer. Here on the rundown, Christine, which you created, this is your handiwork, you write in a bullet point, what happened to Cooks last weekend? So you've asked the question. I will then present it to you. Would you care to share with the class what happened to Cooks last weekend?
Cooks is in the hospital last weekend. It was not a fun Saturday. As you remember, I was prepping all last week for my daughter's Taylor Swift sweepover extravaganza.
Yes.
That was happening Saturday night. Cookie did not attend because Cookie was laying in an emergency room in northern New Jersey.
And you had sent a note to the team, and you thought it was an appendix situation, which happens. And when there's an appendix problem, you go in, they remove the appendix. We were rooting for you. Seemed pretty standard. But then what?
Well, I had been really, really sick for hours before, and it wasn't like a stomach flu type of sick. You know, I knew the difference, and the pain started getting really unbearable in my lower right side. So I went to urgent care thinking, you know, I don't know, they gave me a pain pill or something, and she's like, no, we got to get you to the emergency room, like, ASAP. He's like, you can't even go home. Go. So I went, they hooked me up to an IV, and then I got a CAT scan on my abdomen with color contrast to see if the appendix had to come out, and everything was clear on there. And then that's when I let the ER doctor know that I...
Well, hang on. When it says everything was clear, that means it wasn't an appendix problem, which was the assumption, but it wasn't that. Everything was looking normal there, but the pain was still significant. Now, you're about to get to what you revealed to the doctor, but you didn't want to, right? You had to be basically forced. You had to be forced by your husband to give relevant information about your extremely painful body situation. So explain that.
Well, multiple people told me I should probably let them know that. But in my mind, I'm like, oh, that happened so long ago. Like, really? And then, like, how am I going to explain to them? I don't think I'm a very large gal. Like, why was I on this medication? Like, I think they would question it immediately. But yeah.
So hang on. Just to clarify, you were, like, embarrassed and resistant to telling medical doctors in something of a medical emergency some information that could be, yes, a bit embarrassing, but also could be relevant to this pain that you're experiencing. You didn't want to fess up to that. Your husband had to force you to do it. Did you not recall that you had detailed this on national radio already?
It's very different when you're on radio because you're not looking at somebody's face. You know, I mean, I could just imagine the judging you were doing, but I didn't have to stare directly at you.
Oh, I'm not thinking about me. I'm thinking about our audience and people all around,
right, but
all
I'm
around
not
the country.
Staring at the audience. Sometimes, as we know on this show, I tend to say too much. But, like, it's when you're in front of a microphone and, like, nobody's right in front of your face, like, it, I don't know. Like, I feel like I talk. I mean, I'm a pretty open book no matter what, but it. To tell a medical professional what I did and how bad it was kind of embarrassing. And everybody, you know, the nurse, the doctor, my primary today, when I had to do a follow-up, all asked the same simple question. Are you a diabetic? No, I'm not. No, I'm not. Mm-hmm. Why did you take that medication? Well, I wanted to lose weight. And how did you get this medication? Online from a woman named Shonda. No, I didn't say that part. But they did. One of them did ask me, how did you get this? And I just told her.
And then she gave you like a Zoom tutorial about how to dose it yourself. And there was a miscommunication and you massively overdosed on this knockoff Ozempic and the rest is history. So they were concerned. This was a fully elective choice to put this into your body, and clearly they were a little bit taken aback by that. Did you use the phrase hot girl summer in this explanation to them?
No, I did not.
No,
I did not. But I did have to say, they're like, well, what was the reason for you taking it? And I said, to lose weight. And, you know, they did their best probably not to judge me and just started typing away. But when I did follow up my primary, I need to now go. I had to get a referral. I need to go to a gastro. And what I probably need now, what they think is going to be my first colonoscopy, and I'm a little young for that, to be honest. But they need to make sure, even though it was so long ago, that medicine, they said, really stops everything in your tracks, literally, in your stomach tracks.
Yeah.
And it can do a whole great. Yeah. Yeah.
It was a bad call.
I wish someone would have told me that before I took it.
Well, I mean, I did, and every doctor. I did it. Your doctors all told you. The Fox doctors all told you. You had like half a dozen people tell you, as a matter of fact. On radio, off radio, they all said don't do it. And you did it anyway. You wanted hot girl summer. And by the way, did hot girl summer even work out?
No, because I was so sick. I could barely move. Do you remember? Like, I was pretty much bedridden for a couple of weeks, so by the time I pretty much got out of bed and was able to, you know, move around and stuff, like the weight came back on. And it's true. The weight comes back on and then the weight comes back on fast and furious and with an extra couple pounds. So it didn't last,
which was another one of the concerns that we raised here on the air, that even if you lost weight and then you stopped for whatever reason, the weight would come back with a vengeance, which it did. But the good news is we had the whole conversation with Dan on the air about it. We said, are you going to keep taking this expensive stuff forever? And I just don't think you really wanted to think through the end game at all. And so you were just like putting random stuff into your body. Did you tell the doctors, because I feel like this is something that you would be proud of, I'm not doing that anymore. And in order to lose weight, my new plan is exercise, i.e. Peloton. That's a positive development.
Yes, I did say that. I did say that. And
did that get a thumbs up from the medical professionals?
Yeah, they didn't really seem to care that part. They were just more concerned of what I actually did to myself, you know, last summer. Now, my stomach issues and whatever is going on could be nothing related to this. Like, we won't know for a while, but
it's possible.
There was concern. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Big time. Big time.
Okay, so this is one of those cookie life lessons that could be avoided by taking good advice and then isn't avoided by not taking good advice. Has the lesson been finally, formally, permanently learned, or do you occasionally get that itch to call your fake Ozempic dealer back?
Well, it's funny that you say that, because just moments before we started this segment, I just got the most random text from Shonda. She's giving, I guess we're in the Aries month or time of horoscopes or whatever, but she's giving an Aries discount, she said.
Oh. Yeah,
for
that
the
seems
shot.
Really legit, really really strong science there. So she's got like a special taste for less money to get back on her product that already put you in the hospital.
Right. We won't be doing it. I won't be doing that at all. And then she has
That's good.
Well, there's a new product called the Skinny Shot, and that's more of like a vitamin B12. I guess that's supposed to, but we're done. We're done with Shonda.
How have you not blocked her number already?
That's a good question. I guess in the back of my mind, maybe I just thought, oh, you never know. But I know now. I don't want to go back to the hospital. It's no fun. It was not fun. I wasted not only, I mean, the whole day was gone. I was crying and crying because I missed Megan's birthday party. Thank God I had already done everything for the party. But, you know, I missed the bulk of the party because I was so sick. And it's just like, what am I doing? What am I doing?
Yeah. What are you doing is a question that comes up in many people's minds all the time. And I think in this case, maybe the lesson has landed in a way that was tough. Sometimes Cookie has to learn lessons the hard way. And so we just want to put this out there. I did.
I absolutely did. Not warn me. I don't know necessarily all the facts of what you warned me about, but I remember you said you're going to put yourself in the hospital. And I mean, I kept saying, no, I didn't. No, I didn't. Look, it was fine, but caught up with me.
Yeah. Then you're sitting in the ER texting me on a Saturday. I'm like, well, I hope I didn't gloat. I didn't spike the football. I was, of course, wanting you to be okay. And it sounds like you're going to be okay, God willing.
Did you think in the back of your mind it could have been related at all?
No, I just didn't know. Like, what has Cookie now done to herself? I assumed something had happened. I just didn't want to push too hard because you were, you know, in the hospital. So my concern was for your well-being. But this is just like a PSA, right? When it comes to fake counterfeit Botox or some person texting you their horoscope discount for their fake Ozempic, generally it just seems not like a great plan. Consult your actual doctor on these things, or your radio host who's almost always right. The Guy Benson Show, back here tomorrow, same time, same place. Talk to you then. Home stretch, Guy Benson Show, Thursday edition. See you on Special Report tonight on the panel with Brett Baier around 6:45 or so Eastern Time, Fox News Channel. Set your DVRs or tune in live. And here on the radio side, podcast is free every day on demand as soon as the show is over. Bonus Benson also on the weekends. So yesterday we were doing our show planning call, as we always do. And one topic that came up was a story out of Brazil in which apparently a woman tried to take advantage of the death of her uncle, I believe it was. He passed away, and she said, okay, I've got a limited amount of time to try to Weekend at Bernie's this thing. And she brought his corpse to a bank to try to get him to co-sign some kind of a loan. And this is on camera. And I think the bank employees were like, ma'am, I'm not sure that man is in very good shape. What's going on? Well, he was dead. So the whole scheme didn't work out, and it became something of a viral story. So then Christine was asking, would we do that with her if she died, which is, I think, a very strange thought, but she asked the question. And I was joking that there wouldn't be really any assets to steal from her or a good credit to try to exploit, because she will have spent by that point all of her money on things like pet psychics. And she said, no, no, I'm not doing psychics anymore. And I said, wow, maybe there's been a breakthrough. Maybe between the Ozempic situation and a few other very good pieces of advice from yours truly that she ignored and later regretted, maybe she has gotten over her fascination with psychics and all of that. The answer to that is no. She's just found something else that she wants to pour her money into. Christine, what is the new scheme?
It's not a scheme. It is called fractional real estate. Do you want to know what that is?
I do.
Okay. So what it is, this is, and I repeat, this is not a timeshare. This is you purchasing, like, say, like, for your second home, you want, like, more of a luxury home. And obviously, real estate, with the prices right now, it's pretty hard, you know, to be able to do that. So with fractional real estate, I would be one of eight owners in a very nice, like, luxurious home, maybe, like, say, in California or in Florida. And that piece of the home is actually mine. It is, this isn't like I'm buying time into the home. I can sell my piece, like, based on the market, and I can sell it back to somebody. Or if we as a collective group decide we want to sell the home, the eight of us would sell the home and make the profit or make the money off of it. I think this is such a genius idea, because there's a company out there that is going to be your manager. So basically all I'm doing is giving the money to the company. They already purchased the home, or and they're already working with banks that would give me a loan, because a lot of banks are a little iffy on this. And then, like, say the roof goes or this or that, they handle it. And then they'll just say, like, okay, out of eight of you, this is how much each of you owe, or, you know. And then you get, say, like, a month, a year, or you get a certain amount of time in your home, and you'd have to work it out.
All right, so hang on. So you'd buy the property with other people.
Right.
And then when it came to using that property, let's say you wanted to go and enjoy this home, because you don't just go into, like, the one room that you own. You would have access to the house for a period of time, but you can't all be there at the same time. So you share that time? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, you'll share the time. No. Hey, hold on. No.
So it's a time share.
Yes. No, it's not a time share. You just walked me right into that. It is not a time share. A time share is when you invest in, say, like, you know, a company has multiple properties and you're investing the money into your into the time there. But you do not own anything. This you own. This is yours. This is your piece.
And then you share the time. You share the time with other people that co-own it, but it's not a timeshare?
It's not a timeshare.
Okay.
There are some issues with this. A lot of upscale, like, areas, say Newport Beach, California, say you want to go buy, you know, a house in the OC, they don't want this. Because they do kind of look at this as a form of timeshare, and which that is prohibited in Newport Beach. But a lot of the companies, like the big one I'm looking at, are fighting back because they said no, because, like, I would be a resident of that area. I own the property. It's not like I'm out there, you know, just to party it up and walk
away
from it.
You'd be a partial resident, kind of. So you ran this past Dagan McDowell, who's got a lot of business acumen. She covers the economy. We have her on the show.
Yes.
You described the situation, and she responded with what? What did she say to you?
She just said one word, timeshare.
Is that one word or is it two?
Is timeshare one word or two? I think it's
doesn't matter.
No, it's one word.
The whole response was, her entire response to your pitch was timeshare.
Yeah, but I think she's wrong.
Okay, but you also thought all the Fox doctors were wrong about knock off Ozempic. They're like, don't do it, and then you ended up in the hospital. Are you also going to now ask another expert and ignore that? Are we going backwards on the learning of lessons,
no,
Christine?
No, we're not going backwards. And like, I mean, I don't even have the money for a 1/8 of a luxury home right now. So it's not something that Bobby.
So this would be like some sort of a villa or mansion?
Yes. Yes. Like
where would you want to own a fraction and share the time?
So I am always like, I love Florida. Like I just love, you know, Miami, Fort Lauderdale, like, or somewhere on the water. Bobby is not a huge Fort Lauderdale fan, so maybe Arizona or somewhere in California. I mean, how cool would it be if you owned a piece of home in Malibu? But then you got to think about, you know, getting there. It's far. So I think I would probably settle on somewhere in Florida, maybe like Fort Lauderdale.
And you were saying that this company, it had some sort of name, like European-sounding name, didn't it?
Yeah. Do you want me to say it or no?
I don't know. I mean, it just sounded like, oh, it's very classy.
It is.
It has a name. Is it France, maybe? Or Italy?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I knew it was one or the other. I don't really remember the name of the company, but it's sort of like, ooh, this is very exclusive and wealthy people can come and be wealthy with us. That was kind of the vibe I got from the name.
Yeah, but I think because it is a luxury, you know, it's not a rental home. It's a luxury, you know, real estate kind of company.
Yeah, but you can't use it whenever you want to, right?
No, because
only
you have
partially yours. Now, what happens if everyone wants to use the luxury property at the times of year that everyone would want to? Like, it would make sense. Like, people say, okay, this time of year is the high season in this neck of the woods, and you're all fighting each other because you own 1/8 of the house through whatever this scheme is called.
Fractional home ownership. Yep.
Who, like, do you guys have, like, a conflict resolution circle and, like, a little, like, bonga drums, and you guys get together and work out the disagreements? How does that get settled?
No, I think that all goes through the company. So I think the company, like the manager of the home, would have to figure that out. I was wondering that because, like, everybody's going to want, like, you know, the week between Christmas and New Year's, right?
Right.
Or the week after Easter. Or most of the summer. Because you can
only... I'm an owner.
Exactly.
But that's what everyone's saying.
Right. So I think there will be compromise. And you can't take more than, say, 4 weeks at a time. Like, I could go there for a month, but after that, you can't stay longer. So I
want. Now, what happens if you decide, okay, I've now forgotten my other decisions not to spend lots of money on psychics, and you're now out of money and you're going broke? You're like, I know, I will sell this property that I don't really own.
Yeah, you do own it. Yes, you do.
Yeah, but you own a fraction. That's the whole point of the fractional thing here. Are there going to be a ton of people eager to buy your fraction? Like, you could put the listing up, but it's not really yours to list. It's like you can have a photo of a beautiful house and then have a little perforated line over 1/8 of the house and say, like, this is for sale, kind of.
I think that, again, like, the company would be working with you because then you have to look at the market, because if the market's higher than what you bought it for, your fraction is probably going to go up. And yeah, you got to find somebody that's going to buy into your fraction.
Okay. So,
but they say it's easier to do that than to, like, sell your timeshare.
Well, you do know that there are entire programs and companies devoted to helping people get out of their timeshare schemes because they find it so unbearable and so unworkable. That's like a whole separate industry to help people extract themselves from timeshares. And this is kind of, let's just call it a glorified timeshare. It's what Dagan McDowell just straight up called a timeshare. You're going to ignore her. Last question. Your husband, Bobby, does he know about this, or is he learning about it right now here on the home stretch?
He's learning about it. Not right now. He's been learning about it. But, like, he said, we just bought a home. What are you, out of your mind? Like, we don't have any money for this. So once we do, I will revisit this. But I still need to do a lot of research. You know, like, I don't want to just jump into something.
Yeah, you never do that.
Yeah, I like to
you
look.
You do a lot of vetting, due diligence, just like, you know, your person who is texting you for your Aries special of things to inject into your body yesterday.
Oh, you're making fun of me. You're saying I don't do enough research.
You do not do research or vetting, and you just jump into things. In this case, you're limited by not having the money at your disposal, thank goodness. I'm just saying be very, very careful. I think this might not be the best decision. Now, here's the thought. If you want to do a bunch more research and really make sure that you're making a sound decision if you get the money one day to do this, might you begin that intensive research tomorrow on your latest vacation that you're going on?
I knew you were going to bring that up.
I was curious because you're going on vacation again. You were just on vacation. You got another one tomorrow. So are you going to do – is this going to maybe be going to Fort Lauderdale to look at these 1/8 properties that you would, quote, buy?
No, we are heading to an amusement park with extended family for the weekend. And I don't think I'd be wanting to buy a house in that area. So, but you know what? Oh, my God. I should pitch this – not pitch it, but, like, I should bring this up to Bobby's family because they're the ones coming. Maybe they'd be interested in doing this with us. Then, like, oh, how cool would that be? Because the more
your fractions get bigger.
Exactly. So that, yes, exactly. Fraction gets bigger the more people you know.
Yeah, let us know how that conversation goes on the roller coasters, and maybe we can revisit it when you're back from your vacation, whenever that might be. We are out of time now, so we've got to run back here tomorrow. Well, most of us are back here tomorrow doing our jobs from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern time for the Guy Benson Show Friday edition. We'll talk to you then. See you on Special Report coming up here, and have a great night. Home stretch, Guy Benson Show Friday edition. Thanks for listening. Catch me on Fox News Sunday this weekend. Check your local listings. That's Sunday morning on your local Fox station. And then later in the afternoon, it replays on Fox News Channel. Back here on Monday. Here on the radio, of course, GuyBensonShow.com. Podcast always free. Bonus Benson. It's a good one this week. You can check that out tomorrow, plus the replay on Sunday. So if you're listening on the broadcast, our bumpin' music was Anti-Hero, Taylor Swift, her last album that did very, very well. And she announced at the Grammys that she was putting out new music. I guess it was last night or technically today at midnight. I know some people stayed up and had little listen parties by themselves or with friends. And then I guess a few hours later, I don't know all the TikTok on this, she put out even more. So it's not just one record now. It's like two, like 25 songs or something. Dylan, is this the Tortured Poets Department plus something else, or is this just one massive record with like two dozen songs on it?
Yeah, so it came out late last night. I mean, it came out at midnight, but then it is all one album. It's all the Tortured Poets Department. I think people are calling it Tortured Poets Department the Anthology, because it's like, it's a full song, or a full album, rather. It's a The Anthology edition is 15 additional songs. So it is really, really long. And I think some of the reviews that I've been seeing is that it's pretty bloated. Like, it's just a big album.
Okay, so I am hesitant to put it out there because I know her fans are really, really loyal. And I've seen in my social media feeds that the super fans are just doing what they always do, which is just like trip over themselves to emote and talk about how they're all weeping as they listen and they're very moved. Fine. Like, if you love her music, great. I like a lot of her music, actually. I don't love all of it. I have listened to none of this, but I've read some reviews by people who don't like her. And then even by some people who are like mostly fans who are saying this is kind of not very catchy. It's kind of slow. And it's not her best work. Lyrically, production-wise, I'm just getting sort of mid at best reviews so far. But I don't know. That could just be people racing out with a hot take to stir the pot because she's like this massive sensation. You guys, you and Justin, have both listened to at least some of the songs so far.
So before you give your reviews, like, what's your stance on Taylor? Hater, fan, somewhere in between, Dylan, where do you stand?
I would say I am somewhere in between. Like, before I started dating my now wife, I was a firm Taylor Swift hater, but she softened me up a little bit because she is a Swiftie. So Mel has softened me to the Taylor Swift. I'd say I'm probably at a neutral stance right now.
Has she heard the new music?
She stayed up until midnight, and she blasted through that whole album. So she's heard the whole thing.
And how does she feel about it?
She loves it. She loves it. I mean, that's pretty much in tow with the rest of the Swifties right now. They're saying it's I saw somebody said it was a magnificent and a triumph on Twitter this morning. So I think she'd probably echo those sentiments.
Is there any universe in which she would put out music and she and then your wife would say, eh, I don't really like it? Or is it going to be loved no matter what because it's from Taylor Swift?
I think it's going to be loved no matter what. Last one, she wasn't like a huge fan when it first came out. And you go back to her a day later and she said, this might be my favorite Taylor Swift album. I actually love this album. Okay. So I think the Swifties they're always on board with whatever she has to put out.
Okay, and Justin, where do you fall on this spectrum?
I'm kind of with Dylan where I'm somewhere in the middle. I never hated Taylor Swift because I really liked her early music. I'm a big Love Story, Teardrops on My Guitar type of guy. And I would say over the last like 5 or so years, it's kind of faded off for me. But I'll always give her new music a listen, and I understand that her fan base is crazy. But usually someone who, you know, considers her one of the greatest artists of my generation, at least. But I've never hated her. I've never been the biggest fan. Somewhere in the middle.
Okay, so I think I've said, if someone offered me a ticket to see her in concert for free, I would definitely go. Even for, like, face value, I'd probably do it. I'm just not going to pay all this money to go see her because while I like a lot of her music, I'm not sure I'm down to, what is it, like, three and a half hours. These things go on forever.
Yeah.
It's just not something I want to break the bank for. And, okay, do we have, like, even a sample of any of these new songs that we can play?
Yeah,
like, what
so
do we have?
I could get a little bit of Fortnite, which is the intro song that features Post Malone.
Okay, that's the one that's, like, the very first song on the record. Is that right?
Correct.
Okay, so let's just hear a tiny bit of it. So, is that the chorus?
Yes.
That's the chorus?
Yeah, it's a very slow album. It's just not super
kind
upbeat.
Of, I don't know, not much of a melody there, kind of.
Nothing that gets you out of your seat. I think of Taylor Swift, my favorite songs from her are ones that get me jumping, that get everybody involved, that everyone
right, I love
can
Trouble.
Vibe with.
Like, Trouble is
a
banger. She's got some bangers, and it's fine to mix it up. Maybe this is just the type of record that you play in the background, and it's kind of a vibe, and you have some wine, and it's not, like, meant to be super catchy, but it can kind of have a nice, pleasant sound in the background. I don't know. Like, I don't hate that, but there's nothing about that where I'm like, oh, wow. So I don't want to get into trouble with her super fans. But I did hear, because through social media you see little snippets of stuff. Apparently she started beef with Kim Kardashian. What happened here?
Yeah, so one of the song names is Thank You, Amy, but it's all in lowercase except for K-I-M, which is obviously a dig at Kim. And I can't say that I've depicted through the entire song, but there's a lot of subtle shots in there, and one of the lines is something along the lines of, your kids are going to be listening to this not knowing that it's about me and you. And it really, you know, got the Taylor Swift fans pumped up who have been fighting her for so long.
Why? Mm-hmm. Is there a reason why they've been fighting her?
It has to do back to the Kanye West thing where Kanye called
her
out.
I'm going to let you finish, but...
And then when he released Famous...
How long ago was that? That was so long ago.
So long ago. But then there was, I think, a phone call that was, you know, faked by Kim where it was Taylor giving her permission to use her name on Famous, but that was edited by Kim Kardashian. They think she's the devil.
Okay, I was unaware that there was any beef at all. No idea. Okay, so we've got that. That's got tongues wagging. Ooh, the celebrity feud. I have so little energy for that. And then on the flip side, she calls out in a good way. She pumps up Charlie Puth at some point. Right, Dylan?
Yeah, that's correct. She name-dropped Charlie Puth, and she said that he should be – she basically said that he should be a bigger artist, that more people should be listening to Charlie Puth, which good for him. I guess he's going to have the Swiftie fan base behind him now.
Well, I mean, that's my reaction because he has a couple songs that I kind of liked, but it's been years, I feel like. I don't know if he's making new music or not. And I was like, okay, that's a good song. That's a good song. Fair enough. But I guess, yeah, one of the lyrics in one of these many songs on the new album from Taylor Swift, I guess one of the quick, maybe not a throwaway line, but one of the things that she was talking about, she and this lover or whoever she was with, they decided collectively, Charlie Puth is, you know, really good and should be bigger. And this has to be the most exciting thing to happen in Charlie Puth's career in years, because when Taylor Swift says to her fans, hey, let's go do this thing, they go do that thing. So Charlie Puth, I would imagine, is going to have like a pretty good week or month or more, and maybe they'll collaborate on something. Maybe radio stations will start playing more of him because Taylor said to, basically. So I wonder if that was a complete surprise to him. Like, did people start texting him like, dude, you're mentioned? Or did he know it was coming? Did she give him a heads up? But it's got to be nothing but good news for him is my guess. All right, so bottom line, how many songs would you guys say you've listened to so far of the Tortured Poets Department out last night?
The way that I consume albums, usually I take the train into work. It's about an hour, so I put it on my headphones for my entire train ride. So I think I got through about 7 songs.
Okay.
And if I like a song, I'll like look at my phone and say, oh, like this is a good song that's on. What's the name of it? And I did not do that to any of the 7 songs.
Oh, 0 for 7.
It's just nothing captivated me.
Yeah. I saw some of the critics are saying like the lyrics are subpar by her standards. And just the catchiness isn't there. Like one guy who is an admitted Taylor Swift, maybe not hater, but disliker, he's like, are these even songs, was the way he put it. I haven't heard anything beyond what you just played for me. Dylan, how many songs have you heard?
I think I maybe like probably about the same, like 7-8 songs into the album. But it's over 40 songs long, so I'm not even a quarter of the way
through. Wait, it's more than 40? I thought it was like 25.
It's a 40-song anthology, 40-plus, wow. And it's over 3.5 hours.
Oh, long. Boy. Okay, so you guys have maybe a bit of a weekend ahead of you because you've got a Swiftie wife. Justin, do you have a girlfriend who's into this? Or
yes, my girlfriend Hannah, definitely a Swiftie. Not as much as Dylan has made his wife sound to be, enough where I could have an opinion, but definitely not. A huge Swiftie. She loves the music. She's definitely listening to the album.
Okay, so you guys will hear more of it over the weekend. So maybe it's premature to reach a final conclusion based on 7 or 8 songs. But so far, if we're giving it, you know, a 1 out of 10 rating, what are we giving it so far, Justin?
5.5 for me.
5.5?
Yep.
All right, Dylan?
I was probably also going to give it probably a 5, 5.5, yeah.
Okay, so the term that the kids would use is mid. Is that right?
That's correct.
Good job.
Okay, it's mid. And that's going to bring in some anger, I think. If we have some big Taylor fans in the audience, they are probably yelling, "Where's Christine? There's not a woman on this. There's no woman's voice. All these dudes just hating on Taylor." It's not hate. I don't think we have a single Taylor hater here.
I'm sure that entire car ride to the amusement park today was full of new Taylor Swift.
Probably.
A lot of excitement.
Probably. We should have actually thought of texting Christine before this segment to be like, do we have a review? Because Cook would be like, 11 out of 10. And I think I've got cheap Taylor tickets that I found on Facebook from some totally legitimate above board people. And it was only $1,000 each. That's probably what's happening there. So we should probably text her to make sure she doesn't do anything rash and to see what she feels about the new music. Because with Megan, her daughter, I guarantee you the drive to and from the amusement park was filled with the new Taylor. You can take it in over the weekend, see how you feel about it. Maybe we can reconvene next week and revisit on the Guy Benson Show. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you Monday.
That was this week's edition of Bonus Benson.
For more Guy Benson Show,
go to GuyBensonShow.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Pull up a chair and join me, Rachel Campos Duffy.
And me, former U.S. Congressman Sean Duffy, as we share our perspective on the discussions happening at kitchen tables across America.
Download From the Kitchen Table, The Duffys, at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you download podcasts. Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.